Top executives from Facebook and Twitter came to Capitol Hill Wednesday prepared with apologies and plans to safeguard their platforms, especially ahead of the 2018 midterm elections. The Senate Intelligence Committee, looking at efforts by social media companies to stop foreign attempts to influence U.S. elections, clearly angry at Google for offering to send a lower-level executive, left an empty chair at the table.
By one estimate from the analysts at LMC Automotive, about 12% of electric cars in the world's roads are from Tesla. Yet that may drop to less than 3% in a decade, they say, which would make Tesla just another electric automaker. BMW and Volkswagen are making similar pushes. The German companies have formed an alliance along with Ford to make a network of car chargers on highways, emulating Tesla, but also evidence of the economies of scale at work.
Powerful central bank, the Federal Reserve, is confident the economy will keep growing and it can prevent things from veering out of control by raising rates gradually. But to other market watchers looking under the surface, there are some things to worry about. One is the housing market, which is showing strain. And for most Americans, housing is the biggest investment they have, even bigger than what they own in the stock market.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It's September the 6th, and it's 5:10 in the morning. Here we are with another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. Thank you for being with us this morning. We've got a great show for you today. Of course, it's Thought Leader Thursday, and Don Lloyd will be here from Associated Bank for a conversation about how world markets are dealing with the latest trade disputes, how the dollar is faring against some foreign currencies, issues in Turkey and in Venezuela. Don will join us momentarily a little bit later in the program. She's created a platform where women connect and share information, and now she's written a book about her life and work, and mogul founder, CEO Tiffany Pham will be with us about her new book, You Are a Mogul, which has just hit bookshelves. She'll be on in our second segment this morning at about 5:40. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Futures are pointing toward opening gains a little bit later on Wall Street. Dow futures are up 40 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are up just a little bit this morning. In Europe, markets generally are in the green, but just barely. The FTSE and the DAX just up single digits this morning. The CAC in France is up almost 0.25%. And as we look to Asia, the markets there are going to end the day mixed as well. In Japan, by down almost by 0.5%, 92 points on the Nikkei. The Hang Seng down 269 points, which is almost a full percent. And the Shanghai Composite is off about 0.5% as well. Oil is trading at $68.81 a barrel. A couple of quick headlines before we begin this morning. The Trump administration and the Canadian negotiators worked into the night last night trying to strike a deal that would keep Canada in the North American Free Trade Agreement along with Mexico. Canadian Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland told reporters last night that as she entered the meeting that they will report back to everybody this morning. She said there was some room for agreement, but none had been made yet. Last week, the U.S. and Mexico reached a preliminary agreement to replace the 24-year-old North American Free Trade Agreement, otherwise known as NAFTA. But those excluded that deal excluded Canada, the third NAFTA country. The U.S. and Canada have been sparring over issues, including U.S. access to Canada's protected dairy market and American plans to protect some drug companies from generic competition. China's government says it's ready to retaliate if the U.S. moves ahead with a tariff hike on Chinese goods and has expressed confidence it can maintain steady and healthy economic growth despite all of this. Commerce Ministry this morning says that necessary countermeasures are ready if 25% penalties due to be announced as early as this week on $200 billion worth of Chinese products take effect. The Chinese measures target $60 billion of American goods. It's Thought Leader Thursday. Don Lloyd is with us this morning for a conversation about how all of this is impacting the currency markets and world markets. Don is an SVP and manager of capital markets, the foreign exchange, rate swaps, commodity derivatives at Associated Bank. Don, good morning. Welcome back to the Opening Bell.
Steve, good morning. I hope your summer's been well.
It's going very well. I have to admit, though, I'm looking forward to fall. Fall is one of my favorite times of year. So
yeah, bring it on. That's what I say. The markets and the world markets just keep, they don't care if it's summer, winter, fall. It doesn't matter. They just keep marching on.
Yeah, and there's so much to talk about this morning. I don't even know where to begin. Maybe with a little bit of what's happening in the headlines over the last couple of days. We got trade deficit numbers. There's NAFTA negotiations. The trade deficit widened for the second month in July. It's now the highest it's been since 2015. What's going on with trade, and how does this work into the discussion we're going to have about NAFTA and China?
Sure. And, you know, enjoy it while it can, because now that the summer's over and Labor Day's behind us, I think now we move into, you know, the new cycle of the midterm elections, and that's going to dominate everything. So things like trade and things like global events, I think, are just going to fade farther and farther into the past for the remainder of this year anyway, as we sit there and go into midterm elections. But certainly, like you said, a lot of information, a lot of events that have been going on throughout the summer. It has not been a quiet summer by any stretch of the imagination. The markets have been quite active. You know, dollars pushing into new highs. Equity markets seem to hit new highs every other day. Interest rates are low. People are working in America. What's not to love? And here we are now with the whole trade. NAFTA is going to be a thing of the past. They'll be teaching it in ancient history before you know it. And you got the United States-Mexico agreement that's coming out. And where do the Canadians fit in that? Who knows?
The president says there is no political necessity to keep Canada in a new trade deal. That Canada would probably disagree with that.
Canada would like to stay close to the United States, but certainly Canada, if there is not a NAFTA agreement or a NAFTA-like agreement, they're okay with that too. Canada's more concerned with tariffs is what they're concerned about. I mean, if you remove NAFTA, our trading with NAFTA, our international trade with NAFTA, is pretty much of a zero-sum game. I mean, you know, we export as much as we import. And you're looking along the lines of about, I don't know, $700 billion of trade that goes on between us. It's a big market. It's a big relationship. But it's pretty balanced when it comes to it. If NAFTA went away, the Canadian GDP would slow down maybe about 0.5%. But if you're talking tariffs, and if we really start to slap tariffs around, and there's a whole plan about what we want and what they want and whatnot, and it really comes down to dairy and whatnot versus auto, and we're using auto as sort of a lever to get what we want to on the whole dairy side. If the tariffs really go into full-fledged attack with Canada, that's going to hurt Canadian GDP by over 1%, about 1.2%, 1.3%. So I think the Canadians are okay if there's not a NAFTA agreement that goes there. They'll find their way and they'll still do trade with the United States. But, you know, if the tariffs move forward, that's not going to be a good thing at all for them. And that's what they're trying to avoid, I think.
So how is the trade, not only with China, not only with Canada, but with China, in other countries, how has this been impacting the world stage in terms of the dollar, other world currencies, that sort of thing that you deal with on a daily basis?
Yeah. You know, international flow and trade imbalances, we've had those for decades. And, you know, the U.S., you know, we're a big importer. We're just a gigantic importer. And that's why we run such a big trade deficit. At the bottom line, what does it do? It displaces workers. It puts them out of work, you know, because we're basically creating jobs, you know, in countries abroad. And there's nothing wrong with that, especially when you've got unemployment as low as you have. You know, those excess jobs are being, you know, taken up pretty quickly. What has it done for the markets? Certainly hasn't hurt the United States. If anything, maybe a little bit of a drag when you sit there and say, well, if we sit there and onshore and bring that productivity back into the United States, put people back to work, get them back on the salaries, you know, off they go, and the U.S. economy does even better. Nothing wrong with that. But at 3.9% unemployment, with GDP the way it's growing right now, which is, let's face it, you know, this thing isn't jogging along. This economy is just steaming along, as far as I'm concerned. You have no inflationary pressures. You've got real low interest rates still, nice yield curve. This is all good news. There's nothing bad about this. The dollar, we talk about the dollar being high, but you know, compared to the euro, dollar's about $1.16, somewhere in there. You know, I've seen it down to 80 some odd cents. You know, this is not, an out of control strong dollar. People are working. Trade imbalance isn't really affecting us all that much, other than maybe we can squeeze a little bit more and have more upside if we sit there and onboard and bring some businesses back here to the United States, which is exactly what this administration is trying to do.
So when you hear analysts say there is a risk premium built into the dollar right now, what is that? How would you translate that?
Risk premium built into the dollar right now. Man, I'm not even sure what that means, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, I mean, when you've been doing this for 30-some-odd years like I have, and you've seen the ranges and the volatility in the markets that I've seen in the foreign exchange markets and the dollar, we are in very quiet, sustained times. Now, the dollar is trending stronger. But what does a risk premium mean? I mean, other than we always have the issue of flight to quality, flight to safety. And you do see that every once in a while, and that flows as world countries convert and assets move from foreign countries back into the United States to go into treasuries or whatnot. It does flow through the foreign exchange markets, and there's a selling of foreign currency, a buying of dollars to sit there and buy those treasuries as they flow in, and that's going to create stronger U.S. dollar. But it's not out of control. So a risk premium, we're just in just the normal flows of what's going on, and the trade imbalance, which is the smallest part of GDP, impacts us, but it's just on the margin. I mean, the big things are the consumer spending, and the consumer's leading this whole recovery. You've got government spending, which recession, expansion, it doesn't matter. It really doesn't change all that much. But the trade imbalance is sort of very much the margin, and it's sort of the fine-tuned tweaking here and there. But it can create upside for us as we sit there and bring businesses back on shore. You know, it just creates more job opportunities and, you know, higher tax revenues.
How are you on interest rates going higher moving forward? Are you on the dovish or hawkish side?
Interest rates should move higher. The yield curve should steepen, but it's a matter of timing. And, you know, in today, you know, today's news cycle is very interesting. You know, gee, interest rates are going up. The Fed's tightening. How many raises have we had this year? How many raises have we had since the tightening began? Gee whiz, let's put the yield curve up 400 basis points or five. No, it's going to steepen. The yield curve is going to rise and shift higher as a whole. But we're talking years. It's taken us years, decades to get as low as we have. It's going to take us years for this yield curve to shift and to move. So the market initially talks about interest rates going up and gets way ahead of itself. Slow it down, settle it down. If you really look back and take a look over the last 30 years, interest rates have moved lower over the last 30 years. We've had little spikes of where they've pushed up a little bit. But to be perfectly honest, in the last 30 years, interest rates have done nothing but have come down. And now we've made this turn, and we're set and poised for interest rates to start to move up. And when you sit there and you look at 3.9% unemployment and, you know, the wage growth and all this stuff, the stage is set for higher rates and inflation and whatnot, or moderate inflation. But not yet. It's going to take years for that to sit there and all of those the financial assets to reallocate themselves and move out of these bond portfolios that have been doing so well over the last 30 years as interest rates have moved lower.
How do you, I know things could be worse. Look at Turkey and Venezuela. Turkey inflation has hit 18%. How do these two countries, watching them, how does that fit into the grand scheme of what we need to be concerned about?
Yeah, Turkey and Venezuela, how can America be doing so well and the parts of the world are burning? And Turkey and Venezuela are two very good examples for very different reasons. Turkey always seems to have this problem of inflationary concerns and assets moving out. And if you go back to the 1970s, you sit there and you see a depreciation of the Turkish lira, to the point where in the early 2000s, they said, let's just take six zeros on the back of this currency and just drop off six zeros. And we're going to call it the new lira. So one new lira is worth a million Turkish lira. And that's a devaluation is what happens. Never good. Turkey's facing the same thing right now. 39% inflation rate. And the way to combat that is to raise rates. But you've got a president that's in there that's not doing it. He's basically taking control of the whole thing, and he's saying, nope, we're not going to sit there and raise rates and sit there and mop up excess liquidity and all of this availability of funds out here. You know, I'm going to sit there and keep that economic growth going, and we're going to look for other ways. And the market doesn't like it. And the market's not going to like it. And that currency is going to continue to devalue, you know, to the point of, let's lop off some more zeros when the time comes, and let's call it a new lira. I see no economic future whatsoever in Turkey right now. Venezuela, you know, what can I say about that? I mean, my gosh, when you sit there and you have an economy based on oil revenues, and then oil collapses, you know, and all of a sudden all of their revenues are gone. And it creates unemployment. It creates a disassociation with your society to the point where now they can't be fed. And you have, you know, 2 million people that have fled from Venezuela and other countries because they can't eat. They can't eat. And what's the government doing? You know, absolutely nothing other than amassing more power, staying in control, and the corruption. Mm-hmm. You know, totally different reason than Turkey, you know, which is more of a, you know, an economic based type thing, whereas the other is just pure out and out, you know, scandal.
Right.
You know, how's the world reacting to either one of those? You know, now, what does that mean for the markets? When you say, look at Turkey, how is that going to impact the European Union? That's what everybody's concerned about, and that's what everybody's focusing on the market, which, again, is good for the dollar. It's good for U.S. investments as this pool of money looks, you know, for some return for some amount of risk. Venezuela, South America, I don't know. I don't know what the answer to that
is. Does the world have a responsibility to get involved in Venezuela to help?
Personally, I think absolutely we do. I mean, you know, if we can't sit there and look at people, families, no different than families we have sitting around this table here that can't feed themselves, that are hungry to the point where they're fleeing their country, you know, where is the humanity? Where is the world? You know, where is the world to yeah. sit there and help out to make sure, and funds are coming in. Problem, they're just getting hijacked, you know, and they're sitting there going off to, you know, basically a dictator who is in place, and he's got the military in his cabinet, so you can't really change things on a forceful nature because he owns the power that be. And, you know, the people are so disheartened that what are they doing? They're fleeing the country. You know, where's the humanitarianism as far as I'm concerned? Yeah, I would love to see that on headlines pages for what we're doing around that.
Don, always good chatting with you. Leave us on an optimistic tone here.
Buy America. I don't care if it's equities, bond market, the dollar, you know, America is moving in, I think, to another 10 years of nothing, financial markets, nothing but upside. I think we're going to look at this and your 401ks are going to be smiling year after year after year for the next 10 years.
All right, Don, we'll see you next time.
Great, thank you.
Don Lloyd is a Senior Vice President and Manager of Capital Markets at Foreign Exchange, Rate Swaps, Commodity Derivatives over at Associated Bank, and he's our Associated Bank thought leader this morning. Remember, you can hear our past conversations at WGNradio.com on the opening bell page. And follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. And you can also head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership. See more about our thought leaders and hear more conversations there as well. It's 5:30. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoNO.com. Farmers Fridge has raised a $30 million Series C round led by Innovation Endeavors, a venture firm founded by ex-Google CEO Eric Schmidt. Other investors include Cleveland Avenue, a food-focused VC firm led by former McDonald's CEO Don Thompson, and Chicago's Hyde Park Angels. And Groupon announced a partnership today with GolfNow, the world's largest marketplace for tee times, to let Groupon customers book tee times at golf courses across the country. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoNO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us today on our Thursday edition of the opening bell. She's created a platform where women connect and share information worldwide, and now she's written a book about life and work. Mogul founder and CEO Tiffany Pham is with us this morning. The book, by the way, is called You Are a Mogul, How to Do the Impossible, Do It Yourself, and Do It Now. Tiffany, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks so much for having me.
I'm so excited to talk with you today. First of all, congratulations on all of your success. You have grabbed this title, Mogul, not something that we normally, that the this society is normally put for women, right? I mean, so this is, you've kind of broken through a ceiling on this, haven't you?
Thank you so much. Really appreciate you saying that. And absolutely, I think, you know, our aim in building Mogul was to help to redefine the word so that ultimately Mogul could be a word that could be attributable to both men and women.
Let's talk about the book. Again, You Are a Mogul, How to Do the Impossible, Do It Yourself, and Do It Now. What is it about? Why did you decide to write it now?
That's a great question. I think over the years, so many women had turned to me, writing me letters, telling me that my story had changed their life. Thousands of letters came in saying this, and ultimately, I wanted millions more to know about the journey that I had, all the lessons I learned along the way, all the mistakes I made especially, so that then they could apply it to themselves and help advance themselves personally, professionally, and become a mogul themselves.
The first step is always the hardest for folks who are pushing forward on that. What would your advice be for somebody who's read through your book here and wants to now follow these steps? What would be one of the first steps to take?
One of the first steps, if it's not to be an entrepreneur, which is going to be different than the first step if they want to be an entrepreneur, is going to be just pinpointing their purpose, their passion. What would make them have a career that is one and the same with their life? Meaning it's not different. It's not separated. What would enable them to get so excited for the day that they would jump out of bed and love to get to work? Because for them, it's not work. So I think that is number one, identifying that purpose, that passion, their why, so that they can keep it front and center and never get burnt out. That will be done through a couple of ways, and they'll have to read the book to figure it out. Yeah. But the tips, you know, essentially will highlight to them that they should try a number of things. Try a role during the daytime, try side hustles at night, and ultimately from a combination of that and other tips in the book, they'll be able to figure out exactly what they're passionate about and become a mogul that way. The second, though, part in which if they do want to be an entrepreneur, the first step for that is to simply just get started with their idea. If they have an idea, just put pen to paper, get started. It's okay if it's not going to be perfect at the beginning, because it will get perfected over time. And I say this because so many of my own friends who wanted to be entrepreneurs never got started because they feared that their organization at the beginning, that business idea, wasn't going to be perfect and they held themselves towards that standard. But it's okay. It's not going to be perfect. Mogul was not perfect at the beginning. Even today it isn't. But it will get perfected over time.
Tiffany, how important is it to have self-promotion and also a little bit of collaboration along this journey?
It's all part of your mission, ultimately. If you are able to communicate about the mission and ultimately get others excited about it, I wouldn't necessarily look and frown upon self-promotion. In fact, you are communicating more about your mission and getting others on board and getting stakeholders to want to support the movement you're creating and your organization. So I think it's important to think about it more in that way and ultimately build an organization that you're proud of that, again, is going to day in, day out make you feel like your life and career are one and the same.
You spent a chapter talking about, and the chapter's titled Crush It in Corporate Life. A lot of folks who maybe want to go off on their own are right now probably in corporate life. Why is it important to have success in that field before you go off on your own?
It was certainly my step in my, it was certainly in my step in my journey, the one that I took, the one that enabled me to learn how to build a company best by being able to sit amongst the most iconic company employees in the world. Be able to learn from them, be able to collaborate with them, so that then I could understand how one day the company that I would run could operate best. So for me, I think it was an advantage. It doesn't necessarily have to be the next step for anyone who is graduating from college, so for example, and looking for that next role to eventually then build their business. Now, if someone is already in corporate world, then there you go. You have an amazing advantage. You're learning from the very best. Take advantage of that. During the day, try to collaborate with as many people as possible, build those relationships and friendships so that then when you do go off and start your business, you already have an existing network within the industry you want to be in, hopefully, and subsequently, you, again, have seen the very best, how it operates, and seen the very worst as well. You'll also know exactly what you don't want to do, and so that will benefit you immensely in your next venture. Mm-hmm.
What advice would you give people to when they ultimately hit those challenges that you mentioned earlier, to work through them and battle through them?
As an entrepreneur, you absolutely have to be so resilient. You have to move past any no's that you encounter. At the beginning of Mogul, I received so many no's along the way. Of course, any entrepreneur does again. So you will have to just remember and remind yourself that a no is a not right now that will turn into a yes. I just want to repeat that because I think it is such a powerful mentality to maintain, and it's my personal mantra. A no is a not right now that will turn into a yes. And so if you can just keep that in mind, you will keep moving forward. You will realize that actually when you're reaching out to 50 people for a partnership or press or marketing or whatever it may be, revenue, and then ultimately you won't see it as like 50 potential no's, but you'll see it as that one potential yes. So which one is it going to be?
You have said in interviews before and read a recent article, I think it may have been in Forbes, where you your advice is to give as much as you get. So whenever you ask those folks, those people that you've just talked about for help or advice or, you know, guidance, offer something in return. How important is that to building a relationship in the business world?
Oh, it's absolutely important because for me, a partnership is not just a take. It's a give and take. It's a mutual benefit. It's a friendship, in fact. And I think the book very much highlights how all of our partnerships at Mogul and in life emerged from long-time collaborations that turned into friendships, that turned into long-time and lifetime partnerships. It's all organic in this way. It's all authentic and genuinely built. And as a result, it enabled us to bring on people who then came along with our, you know, team to continue in this journey and do so willingly, enthusiastically, passionately, and feeling like they are part of our team at the end.
On the website, you see that in action almost every day. Talk a little bit about the success of Mogul on mogul.com and why that collaboration is important for women especially.
Yeah, absolutely. Mogul today has become one of the largest female millennial platforms worldwide, reaching well over 18 million women each week. And that's just the beginning. But we are backed by some of the most incredible media innovators of our time, believing us to be the next generation technology and media company for girls and women worldwide, with a unique model for social impact. For every dollar Mogul earns, we partner with incredible international partners, such as the United Nations, to provide free educational resources to one woman in need, so that ultimately over 62 million women around the world can get free educational resources as of now. So we are in a tremendous position and now have a unique opportunity to impact women's lives in a way that's never been done before. That is done through information access, again, to recap the model and now translate it into the impact it's making. Information access is being shared across the platform, knowledge, insights, opportunities from millions of women around the world, women and men, because we're an all-inclusive platform, in fact. But it's then therefore enabling us to share women's voices, because right now women represent just 10 to 15% of share of voice globally. Next, women represent just 10 to 20% of top leadership positions in the U.S. The ways in which we monetize in our organization is actually to develop technology software that then we license out to companies around the world. Over 150 Fortune 500 companies use us, and over 20,000 companies worldwide leverage our technology that ultimately enable them to attract, retain, and advance diverse talent. This, of course, then helps us to accelerate the rate at which women are being placed into managerial positions and above, and accelerate the percentages I mentioned, 10 to 20% of women in top leadership positions, and accelerate, therefore, the ultimate rate, which is that right now, therefore, we're positioned to reach equality with men in top leadership positions in 2085. So hopefully this effort by Mogul and others that we collaborate with will be helping in that rate. And then finally, if we weren't doing what we are doing now with our social impact model, whereby for every dollar that Mogul earns, we provide free educational resources to one woman in need through the UN and more, then there would be 62 million women and girls around the world who are not allowed by their societies to attend schools because they're literally prevented due to their gender. So altogether, as an organization, we can contribute towards this global good, and we're so excited by everybody who is excited by our mission, too.
Yeah, it's very exciting, and we wish you the best as you move forward on this. Tiffany, any final thoughts on takeaways from the book that I know we want people to pick it up and read it, but give us a takeaway from the book as we close out here.
I hope that everybody realizes from the book and from this conversation that the impossible is absolutely possible and that they just have to go for it. And one of the first ways to get started that I hope they just do right away, implement today, is to think about their dream, think about their passion. What would they love to do 5 years from now? And think about who you want to learn from. Who are the 50 role models that you admire so much in that specific industry whereby your dream would take you? What are the names that you need to reach out to? And so literally reach out to them today. Email them, figure out their email addresses through LinkedIn or some other service, and then thereafter email them in a way whereby they cannot decline. A 5-minute phone call, 15-minute tea, let them know you would love to collaborate with them, learn from them, but also give back to them. That's extremely important, that give, that you would love to support them with your free work, your volunteering, you know, anything that you can to get them to say yes to that tea phone call. Of the 50 people you reach out to, 10 are going to reply, and 2 will actually get tea with you, but 1 is going to change your life.
That's awesome. Tiffany, all the best success with your book, and please come back and visit with us sometime.
Absolutely. Would love to. All right. Such fun talking to you. Tiffany, thank you, Steve.
Thank you. Tiffany Pham, the CEO and founder of Mogul, and the author of You Are a Mogul, How to Do the Impossible, Do It Yourself, and Do It Now. It's out from wherever you buy books at from Schuster. So again, You Are a Mogul, How to Do the Impossible, Do It Yourself, and Do It Now, Tiffany Pham.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward a flat open on Wall Street a little bit later on this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures are mixed. Dow futures are up about 24 points. Now the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Ori and Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. A lot of red on the grain market screen yesterday. September wheat ended the day down 7¾. September and December corn ended the day down 3 cents. And September soybeans and the November soybean contract ended the day down 5¼ cents. And concern over the African swine fever in China impacted the market yesterday in livestock futures. The market, however, closed below session highs. Some contracts settled below previous day highs as the impact on China's hog industry appeared minimal so far. And at the end of the trading session, the December lean hog contract was up just 2 cents a hundredweight. The October live cattle contract ended down 62 cents, and the September feeder cattle contract gained 22 cents a hundredweight for the day. President Trump, in a message yesterday, said the final agricultural bill that the U.S. Congress sends to him to sign into law should include work requirements for people receiving food stamps. And finally, I'm looking forward to being at the Sandwich Fair at noon today on the outdoor stage. Hope it stays dry. And then, of course, on Saturday, down to the U of I for the Salute to Food and Agriculture Day at the University of Illinois. We'll see you at Sandwich. We'll see you at Champaign-Urbana. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook, it's going to be a busy day for economic reports. The Labor Department issues revised data on productivity in the second quarter today. Also, the Commerce Department releases its report on factory orders for July. The payroll processor ADP reports on how many jobs private employers added in August ahead of the big jobs report tomorrow. Freddie Mac reports on the weekly mortgage rates. The Institute for Supply Management has its service sector index for August. The Challenger job cut report is due out today. We'll get initial jobless claims. The PMI services index is due. The EIA natural gas report, EIA petroleum status report, money supply, and the Fed balance sheet being released today. Earnings, Barnes & Noble, Broadcom, and GameStop, and the NFL regular season begins today. So lots of things out there, lots of things that could move the markets on this Thursday. It's September the 6th.